these days of GLP-1 agonists, raising the sign of the cross to obesity, you'd think that the fat cell just has taken on this almost the notion of the devil in our bodies, that these fat cells contain stuff that's really bad for us and we should abolish them forever. Before GLP-1s came along, there was an active industry in sucking the fat cells out. But maybe it's time for restoring the reputation of the fat cell. And I spoke to somebody quite recently who was visiting Australia who is a world authority on the fat cell.
I'm Professor Stephen O'Rahilly. I'm Professor of Clinical Biochemistry and Medicine at the University of Cambridge.
So you're here to resurrect the reputation of the fat cell.
I am a poor, neglected cell. We often think of it as an evil baddie, but of course it has jobs to do. It's really bad not to have fat cells. There's a condition called lipodystrophy, people who either have no fat cells or inadequate fat cells.
And those, in fact, it's one of the side effects of some HIV treatment.
It is indeed, yeah. And that's a very difficult and dangerous condition. So we really need our fat cells to be healthy.
So what happens when you've got no fat cells?
So the normal job of a fat cell is to take any extra calories we have and neatly package it away in those professional cells. They're designed to be energy stores. If we don't have them, then the energy has to go somewhere. And it goes to places that are not professional. It goes to places like muscle, liver, the artery linings, and fat goes in there and causes all sorts of mischief. It interferes with how insulin works. It predisposes to diabetes, predisposes to heart disease, predisposes to severe liver disease. Many of the patients with lipodystrophy get fatty liver, and that fatty liver leads to cirrhosis, even sometimes liver cancer.
So fat cells, if you like, are a buffer.
A buffer. A perfect, that's a very good word for, they're a buffer for energy. They're like a battery. If our sun is on and we're storing energy in a battery, that's where we store the energy in our bodies.
So let's go back to basics. It used to be said that you were born with a certain number of fat cells and that was it. And if you were lucky enough to have careful nutrition as a child, you were well set up for the future. Do we have a set number of fat cells?
We probably have a set range, but we don't have a stable number of, they're not like our brain cells. I mean, our brain cells are the number that we were born with. And scientists in Stockholm have recently shown that basically we turn over about 10% of our fat cells per year.
So we have stem cells for fat cells?
We have stem cells for fat cells.
Where do they live?
They live within the fat tissue itself, and they don't look like fat cells, but then they can become committed to becoming fat cells. And really the characteristic of a fat cell is it stores lipid, the triglyceride, the type of fat, in a big droplet in the fat cell. And it needs specialized machinery to do that.
But more and more, people are talking about the fat cell or fat tissue in the body as what doctors would call an endocrine organ. In other words, like the thyroid gland or the pancreas, it produces hormones. So it's far more than just a storage centre.
It does many jobs. It does a very important insulating job. It does a job like bubble wrap. I mean, behind your eyes, the delicate tissues behind their eyes are wrapped in fat so that your delicate vessels and nerves are protected. Under your heel, there's a very specialised fat pad so it's not painful to walk. Fat has many functions. Its particular endocrine function is that it produces a hormone called leptin, which keeps the brain informed about how the state of the battery storage, if you like, is. So your brain knows that you've got enough fat stored through this hormone leptin.
Why did leptin fail as a drug to control weight?
So leptin did not fail. What leptin is a magnificent drug for children who totally lack leptin. It's totally transformative. And we've many years ago treated the first children who had no leptin.
So these kids with Prader-Willi syndrome?
No. These are children with congenital leptin deficiency. They are born with no leptin gene and they're born with no leptin.
Within months, they've got no control over appetite.
They have no control over their appetite. They are monstrously hungry. Their entire lives are dominated by the drive to eat food. And we were fortunate enough to find the first such children back in the late 1990s and the first to give leptin to them. And it's remarkable. Within a matter of days, the appetite is completely transformed. You essentially restore them to a normal life. The first child we treated with leptin all those years ago is now in her 30s. She's had two children. She's a pharmacist. She would never know that she was in any way abnormal. But yet she was vastly obese as a child. So leptin works brilliantly in those conditions. It also works if you have no fat tissue. If you have total lipodystrophy, you lack the fat, but you also lack the leptin. Those unfortunate children, although they're not obese, are ravenously hungry. You give back leptin to them and that greatly improves their appetite.
But for common or garden obesity?
For common or garden obesity, the answer is not quite as simple as a flat no, because what happened was it was trialled very quickly with a rather dirty form of leptin. The metreleptin that was made at the time was a bit hard to dissolve. It was large volumes. It was not a great formulation of leptin. And if you look at the data in some detail, The individuals who had the lower level of leptin, the ordinary obese people who are on the low side for leptin, they did show a response. It just wasn't considered commercially viable at the time because it didn't work across the board. If you had a highish leptin, it didn't work so well.
So coming back to this idea that it's more than just a fat cell, where does the fat cell fit into atherosclerosis, the disease of arteries which causes heart attacks and strokes?
Okay, so that link is a several-step link, because my view is a little bit different from those of some other scientists. So there's some scientists, and quite a few, who would argue that what happens is that you get expanded fat cells, you get inflammation in fat tissue, and it's the inflammation in the fat tissue that's bad for arteries.
And it's thought to be bad for the brain and other organs too, speed up aging.
Speed up aging. My view is that while the inflammatory process may be important in certain contexts, more damaging is the attempt by cells that are not fat cells to try and handle the lipids, the free fatty acids, the species of fat that should normally be handled by the fat cell. If you get obese and you overwhelm your capacity to store safely in your adipose tissue, there are plenty of people who are very, very obese who don't get any complications of obesity because they seem to have an infinite capacity to store safely. It's really when you reach the top limits of your safe storage and you start redirecting the lipids, you redirect it into liver. And when you start redirecting it into liver, you start making these so-called atherogenic particles, the lipoprotein particles that circulate around that bring the bad cholesterol and other types of toxic lipid, the so-called remnant cholesterol, and they then start going into the macrophages in the vessel wall and predispose to atherosclerosis. I'm afraid it is a complex multi-step process, but I think fat in the wrong place is at the heart of most of the problems that we're dealing with.
But fat cells have also been blamed for cancer.
Yeah, obesity is associated with cancer.
Is that the fat cell?
I do not think that is the fat cell.
Oh, you're a real friend of the fat cell, aren't you?
I think you may well have asked me what the fat cell is bad. I think there are mechanical and gravitational consequences of obesity. So I think some things that go wrong in obesity are due to the expanded fat mass. For example, if you have a huge visceral tummy, huge belly, and increased intra-abdominal pressure, then the reflux esophagitis that you get, and then the increased risk of esophageal cancer is almost certainly partly related to simply the mass of fat that's pressing and causing
pressure.
So where
does the cancer risk come from?
The cancer risk comes from reflux esophagitis.
No, I understand that with esophageal cancer, but talking about breast cancer and other forms of cancer.
So I do not think it's a direct result of the fat mass in those conditions. Breast is not a great example because there's very controversial data on the association of obesity and breast cancer. In fact, some studies show that obesity is protective against premenopausal breast cancer, not causative. And it's only the risk looks at this with postmenopausal breast cancer. So the breast cancer is not a great example of a cancer-obesity link. Much stronger.
Pancreas?
A little bit in pancreas, yes. The strongest ones are colon and endometrial, particularly womb cancer.
Uterine. Yeah.
Uterine cancer, endometrial cancer. They are the strongest link. And to me, the data looks most compelling is that you become metabolically sick because of obesity. You become insulin resistant. Your insulin levels rise. And insulin, although it's not a great growth factor, it's a strong anti-cell survival factor. High insulin levels look very strongly associated with endometrial cancer. And there are good animal models where you reverse the insulin resistance and you reduce the endometrial proliferation. So I think that the sequence of events is obesity, ectopic fat, insulin resistance, high insulin as a compensation from the pancreas, and then that predisposes to the colon. So in both of those, I think that's a pretty reasonable hypothesis for why obesity is associated with
it. So you were, given that you're a close friend of the fat cell, are you worried in any way about the use of GLP-1 agonists?
No, because they don't remove fat cells. They just make the fat cells smaller. So you can imagine if you have set number of N fat cells and they're just smaller after GLP-1, they're perfectly capable of growing again if you overeat and they come down. So that's a healthy wave. So health is fat cells that are not overstuffed with lipid. And that's what GLP-1 does. For example, if you do a thought experiment about doing such massive liposuction that you removed somebody 80% of their fat cells, that will be very bad for you in a way that GLP-1 is not very bad for you.
There's increasing research into what they call crosstalk. Mm-hmm. So muscles talk to the gut, the gut talks to the brain, the muscles talk to the brain. What's the crosstalk involving fat?
So that's my sweet spot, is I'm an endocrinologist. I love hormones. I mean, hormones are magnificent creatures. I describe them as like little rowing boats that you send across the... They're so important. They carry crucial messages through the roiling sea of the bloodstream. So I'm in love with hormones. And so it was fantastic when the fat cell turned out also to be a hormonal-producing cell. Now, really, the only one that's absolutely clear is leptin. That is the only hormone that directly comes from adipocytes and acts on other tissues. But fat responds to a panoply of hormones, insulin being the most important. I mean, as soon as you eat, insulin goes up and insulin hits the fat cell and stops it breaking down fat immediately. Then there are others. Adrenaline increases the release of that.
From and the microbiome?
The microbiome. My own personal view of the microbiome is a bit like Gandhi said about Western civilization, too early to tell.
So the bottom line is love your fat cells.
Love your fat cells to a certain extent, because if without them, you're really sick. So they're not all bad.
Just don't load them up too much.
Don't load them up too much.
Stephen, thanks for joining us.
Pleasure.
Stephen O'Rahilly, Professor of Clinical Biochemistry and Medicine at the University of Cambridge. Never will I say a bad word about the fat cell ever again.
We've learned our lesson. We love you, fat cell.
On ABC Radio National, you're with the Health Report.